Hey, it's Dan here. If you want to hear this episode of the Backchat podcast without ads and get extra content that no one else gets, head to backchatstudios.com.au where you can sign up as a patron and access all of our bloody good merch.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
G'day, guys. This week on Backchat, part two of the Adam Gilchrist story. The boys try to take on David Boone's beer drinking record. Receiving his baggy green, and we get into some pretty tough parts of Adam Gilchrist's life and career, including losing three of his great mates in Marsh, Andrew Simons, and Shane Warne. This is a great chat. You're going to enjoy it. Thanks for being with us on Backchat. You can follow all of our good work over at YouTube if you're listening to this one, or if you're watching it, listen to us as a podcast, backchatstudios.com.au. Enjoy. Going backwards, getting your baggy grain. Who presents you the baggy grain?
A bloke called Bill Brown. He was a member of the 1948 Invincibles that Bradman led. So through that sort of 30s and 40s test cricket, opening batter from Queensland, a lovely old bloke, no longer with us. But, he presented me with that at the Gabba. And then he came down to Hobart for that famous run chase. We had Bill and a couple of other of that 1948 Invincibles team with us, came to team dinner and just hung around the team throughout that test match, which was magic. Talking to them about the old Ashes tours, and they see a 6-week boat trip to get over there. So wow. We were trying to replicate that in 2000. Warnie was trying to book Fairstar the Fun Ship for us, but we couldn't get it across the line. 6-week boat trip to England. Jesus. You have to turn around, come back for a bloody recovery.
What were those Ashes tours? Like, what? I know you want plenty, but what was that like from getting together as a team? Like, it's pretty unique to cricket that you go and do that. That's not covered across most sports.
It's and it's probably faded somewhat now because of the schedule. Mm. That's nothing, no fault whatsoever of the players
there's so many trips now.
Just so many. They're flying in from different tournaments, there's so much franchise cricket around now. I think it's important, and if they can, as best they can, try to make sure that teams leave at the start of it. Certainly the big significant tours, the Ashes, you'd all fly into Sydney or Melbourne, went on a few, or any tour, you'd always end up in the capitals, generally it's either Melbourne or Sydney, overnight it there, and then off you'd go. And as you can imagine, it'd be pretty quiet night that first night, just catching up, having not been with each other for a while. And that's sort of game on. That's where the tour starts. And everyone just knows how sort of privileged and honoured they are to be a part of it. And you'd all leave together and then arrive into the country. Like the Ashes ones in particular, I mean, you go back to the funny stuff and the real anecdotal stuff of Booney, knocking off the cans on the way over there. And we all had a crack at that.
Did you?
Under-19s, Australian under-19 tour, that's all we tried to do was beat Booney's record and, didn't even make it to Hong Kong before we're all passed out. But that's, you land into Heathrow. The first Ashes tour I went on, we did what they did in the previous series. You get off the plane and then go straight into a massive big press conference, where the captain and coach would sit down the front and all the players would be introduced and lined up in the blazers. After 24 hours of flying. And so now they're just sort of tending to come in from wherever they are and trying to make best use of the time, I guess. So it probably makes sense, but they were really good memories, going there as a unit and arriving. And, 2001, yeah, we went to Gallipoli, actually, on the way there. Wow. As a unit, which was just so moving and so inspirational. So to do that and then go in and arrive into England en masse as a unit, you're pretty pumped, ready to go.
Yeah, because as the team, you represent Australia, not just in sport, but people's not hopes and dreams, but they're certainly their feelings around patriotism lie on the shoulders of you blokes going over there. But what test would you guys get presented to the Queen, and the Queen would come?
Yeah, the Lord's Test match. So typically, it was the second Test match, not exclusively, not always. But
what are you saying to the what are you?
Right, just yeah. How do you do? Literally, how do you do? All she wanted to do was talk to Warnie.
Really?
Yeah, she's not a massive she wasn't a massive cricket fan. She supported it and would go and do it, but you know, she was into obviously horse racing and but she would say, you know, cricket's not my main sport, but she'd have a chat. We met on a number of occasions. It sounds a bit flippant, doesn't it?
Yeah. Me and Lizzie, we met on
the pub. But we had a World Cup over there in 99 where all the teams went to Buckingham Palace and we had to line up and then go and meet them again. And then actually I had the job of introducing her to the sporting group at a reception here when she was out here in 2010 for Chogham.
Did you?
Yeah, which was quite a buzz. And
wow.
And again, I wouldn't say that she turned up and went, "Oh, g'day, Gilly." Like, I think she needed a full introduction of who I was again.
Sort of whispering in her ear.
But a funny part of that was the next day I had to fly out at 6 a.m. the next morning to Melbourne to go and do something. And I sat down and had the newspaper and got in my seat, polite small talk to the bloke. Next thing, "G'day, mate." "Yeah, yeah." Pick up the paper, front page of the paper is a picture of the Queen and I with me sort of hosting her, introducing it to the sporting group that were there. And I'm just sitting there going, "Holy shit, how cool's that?" Like, wow, what a buzz. And then I realised that bloke there is looking at me, looking at myself, thinking, what a flog. So I quickly put the paper away. Like, I didn't make mention of it again. But going back to the Ashes, it's unreal. Because you're on a – it's the only tour where you're just on a team bus the whole time. You don't go to one airport once you landed. And that's the hassle with travelling all the other tours. You leave a hotel, you get the bus to the airport, you to wait, fly, but whereas you got this mobile home, which is so much fun on that.
How would you combat jet lag? Because you're doing all these sort of media appearances, flying everywhere. How do you deal with that?
Absolutely bomb yourself the first night.
Right, get on the beers.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you can't help but sleep a lot of the next day, and that just kicks you into gear.
And you swear by that?
Oh, for sure. That's brilliant. Well, you're doing it anyway, catching up with your teammates. So
that's right.
You're catching up and have a good time doing it. And yeah.
What about catching up with the other team? That's pretty, it's probably the only sport I can think of that you catch up with your opposition after it's finished. Any good memories of, you know, after series with England and things like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. That's one of the more prominent parts of your memories of it all, really. They're significant times. I think most retired sports people, or certainly from team sports, talk about a lot, don't they? The change room element of it. So that sense of team and sense of shared experience. And then, you know, if it's been a good one, to celebrate it. And if it's, even if it's been a bad one, to commiserate and get through it. So, yeah, plenty of fond memories through that time. It's amazing how a lot of teams, I think there was teams through our era that understandably, again, I'll be at here, but were probably a bit intimidated by us, certainly with the profiles of Warnie and the Wars, McGrath, you know, that, and Ponting, you know, later on as he assumed the leader's role. So a few teams were a bit timid with us, and they shouldn't have been. There was a West Indies team of 2000 and 2001, so it was just on the after their prime time. So that newish batch were coming through. Brian Lara was probably the main overlap. Courtney Walsh was still there. But there's a lot of youngsters and they didn't come near us for five tests. And we smashed them 5-0. But they came in after the last day of the last test at Sydney and sat down. And we would have had a 5 or 6 hour hit out with them. And we hardly spoke. They just took over. It was like you'd paid to go and see worse comedy. They were unreal. And not only were they funny and really interesting to talk about, but they had observed us so much. But there would have been an hour. It was like a floor show where they all got up one by one and just mimicked what we do, impersonated us, Haydos batting or whatever it was, Tugger, his technique, or the way McGrath or Warne bowled. And they were just like stand-up comics. And it was funny, if they'd done that after the first test, I reckon they would have realised that we're all just human and we really enjoy them. Whereas I think they sort of went, oh, no, we sort of revered us a little bit too much. But there's a lot to be said of it, getting in there, and it's pretty easy. So we made a real point of it. I certainly did, to try and get into the opposition every game. It's hard in the one days, but test matches, yeah.
The cricket as a sport has it just filled with stories, as far as I can tell, and more than other sports maybe, that it seems like it's a sport that really, you know, breeds the good stories. And
I think that's the time it takes.
Yeah.
I would assume. I mean that in all seriousness. There's so much time, isn't there? Like, I mean, 5-day test. Mm. But even grade cricket on a Saturday afternoon, you know, you think sort of from midday till 6:37, or if you're kicking on afterwards in the bar for a few, but it's a lot of time where you're just sitting, and a lot of idle time too, which is worrying for those that don't handle your own thoughts too well.
Maybe you can't just sit there in silence, can you?
No.
You're forced to talk.
Yeah, no.
Better chat to your mate.
Yep. And it could be about anything, but yeah. And it's the same on a club ground or in a national change room. The thought processes and the concept of the team environment is the same. There's the jokers, there's the loud ones, there's a bloke like the music blokes that are, you know, totally there for social reasons, but yeah, they're not as focused as a bloke that's just homing in on ball one already. So it's good.
Have you got a couple of favourite Ashes stories? Maybe a favourite Warnie story that you can share with listeners? That I know you've probably got lots, but any favourites?
Warnie one. There's one it's probably been well thrown around already. Well, it has across different things, but it is legit. I do love it, where we went and did this boot camp, and tell me if you have heard. But we went and did a boot camp because we ended up losing the Ashes of 05. Mm. And Warnie didn't want to do the boot camp. None of us did. It would have been a week off, but John Buchanan, who Warnie didn't particularly like, called a boot camp. So off we go in the Glasshouse Mountains up in Queensland. And cut a long story short, we had no phone, we had no watch. So Warnie was spewing about the phone for a week. You can't have that. And we got told not to bring any hair product. So Binger was spewing. But we had to learn that they were ex-SAS guys running this program about team building. And they were going to smash us physically and mentally, all that typical boot camp army style stuff, and then challenge us leadership and
all that. I've been on it.
But we had to put out our dependent medication. Huss had asthma, so he puts his puffer up, and Pigeon's got back, so he puts his tab out. So that's where Warnie puts up 8 packets of Bench and Edges right at the start of the week.
And I need
that's unbelievable. So we start laughing, and they said, right, I assume the position. It's a push-up position, so we all start doing push-ups. I'm warning, no more funnies. But I don't know how he did it. We on that night or the second night, we're cooked. We're physically gone, but we're in the middle of these woods. We're trying to get sleep, and then they set off these stun grenades. So sleep deprivation's coming into it. We're panicking, and they're barking orders as it's screaming this role play. The enemy's coming. You've got to pack up. You can't leave anything behind. Brett Lee's in my group. We've got two sets of clothing that last a week. Binger's been through both of them in one day. He's got them strung out around the trees, all drying out. I'm going, Binger, get up. He's lying in his sleeping bag, nude. Get up. We've got to get out of here. We're all panicking. And, you know, and you're tired and you're freaking out. These flickering lights like lightning are going off and they're making it loud. JL's over in the corner salivating, going, here, bring it on, bring it on. Husses in another corner just thinking about hitting cricket balls. So there's panic, chaos, everything, all the different personality. And then in the darkness over there, you just see this little orange glow light up and Warnie's on the durries. His dependent medication's kicking in. But everyone just admired it and went, well done, mate. Good on you. But he's
calm as a cucumber.
Yeah.
Cool as a cucumber.
That's great.
He didn't like Buchanan.
Can I take you to Cape Town 2006? You've just won the second test, 2-0 up versus South Africa.
Yep.
Couple of beers that night. Gets a little bit later in the night.
Warnie's 100th test, I reckon.
Was it?
Yep.
So a big occasion.
Well, was that too? No, that Warnie's 100th test might have been earlier. Sorry, anyway, I digress.
Yeah. So you had a few beers, celebrate. It was a three-test series, so 2-0 up, can't lose. Got a bit later in the night and you wanted to go sing the song somewhere?
Oh, we went to the top of Table Mountain. Yeah, on top of the cable car.
So this is like the famous Table Mountain in Cape Town.
Yep. Stunning.
Like that. So how do you get up there in the middle of the night?
Well, Warnie knows someone who's got the keys to crank the cable car up.
What do you mean? Well, Warnie just gets on the phone.
Right? Yeah, made a call, got the operator to crank it up and
was the whole team there?
Yeah. Not everyone was on the roof. Most got into the cable car, but there was a number of us that got up on top. And I can tell you, OH&S, we didn't tick every box there. We could have been a man or two down by the end of that trip, but it was amazing. Haydos was doing the old Leonardo DiCaprio, sort of standing there with nothing on but an Aussie flag draped around him, doing the "I'm the King of the World." But it was pretty empowering going up the top and looking back over the top of Cape, all over Cape Town, singing the team song, like as if it really mattered in the big perspective of life. But we felt pretty proud of ourselves. But it was a risky ploy.
Did Warnie jumping on the phone to make things like that happen a bit?
Yeah. Yeah, good contact list, Warnie, unsurprisingly.
Is he the most famous person in the world? Maybe Indian cricketers, maybe beat him.
In the cricketing world?
Yeah. At the time when you guys were playing? Most recognisable?
Yeah, I think so. I think, volume of people. Sachin Tendulkar.
Yeah. But when Shane Warne calls, people are answering.
Yep. Yeah, he just had this a magnetism, a charisma. One of those guys you hear people say when he walks into a room just draws the attention. He was so well. People just wanted to be around him or know him or get to know him. There was just this this interest, be it sporting, cricketing, sporting, or anything else. Entertainers, singers, pop groups. He was. There was just genuine interest in him, and he was Hollywood. He was next level from the rest of us. We all knew that, didn't bother anyone. It was just great to be on the journey with him, and he was a really generous guy when it came to trying to include if something really special was happening, or he could get guys to a concert or something like that, because he literally, or you saw Chris Martin out here and Coldplay, they were really, really close, and the effect that Warnie's passing had on him. And yeah, that's the level of stardom that Warnie was, and his the reaction to his passing, that simply says it all there, the tributes that flowed in. So it was a crazy ride, but it was bloody good fun.
You I can hear how tight you are with all your teammates. So Warnie passed away. You had a patch there, mate, where I spoke to you on radio, I think somewhere through the middle of this, that lost a great mate in Shane Warne, a great mate in Roy Andrew Symons, and a mentor in Rod Marsh in a really short patch of time. Like, one, how did you deal with that? And two, what about your surrounding, your group of mates? Like, because people see you as cricketers and sports people.
Yeah.
But in the end, you're mates and you've lost a bunch of them.
Yeah, quite surreal time. I mean, Rod and Warnie in the same day. A lot of people forget that. It was, 4th of March, at, 6 a.m. in the morning, received a call that Rod, my hero, my mentor, a friend, had passed. And then by 9 o'clock that night, I got my 14-year-old boy coming down the stairs saying, "Dad, Warnie's dead." I'll never forget those words, him saying that and just thinking, what? What? It's a joke. But so that's that one day. And then, 7 weeks later, Roy as well, which was even more, it just felt on the back of what we'd already been dealing with, the enormity of Warnie, that it was even more surreal that it was a bad joke. But but I think, how do we get through it? I think talking about it a lot, even now, it's therapeutic, and it was through that period of time, as hard as it was, and being prepared to show your vulnerability and your emotion. It's some good comes out of it that those guys would have been really proud of, that it then stimulates more regular contact between our group and little mini reunions and literally catch-ups that you always intended to do but you didn't act on. So that's something that those guys would be, I think, really proud of. If nothing else, they stimulate that activity in amongst a friendship group.
Yeah, a lot of people have lost close ones, whether it be relatives or friends or family, whatever it is. That I think that is a massive one. It brings people together, and it's shocking, right? You go to a funeral and you see people you haven't seen for however long.
Yeah.
But you get the feeling, well, life's short. And so why are we not catching up? Why are we not doing a reunion? Why are we not staying together?
It was a crazy period of time. And everyone had the thing about almost Warnie and Roy. And I guess Rod would have been, he was one of his era and his time, the type of character of a blend of these guys. But everyone had a story, a Roy or a Warnie story. And whether they were teammates that played 100 tests with them or a punter on the street, everyone just felt like they had a moment.
Mm.
And legitimately. And it's nice to... I think that, again, that's another wonderful legacy that leaves behind, that moment and that experience only becomes more and more important to you, and that's testament to the sort of blokes they were and are, their spirit and legend that lives on, that continues to be.
Bloody well said. Cricket in general, mate, I'm sure Dan's got a few more, but
yeah. We'll go to some more current...
Yeah. I was just going to ask a couple of current cricket questions.
Yeah, I mean, the big one that happened with the Ashes just gone sort of sparked a lot of controversy, a lot of interest back into Test cricket. Was the Bairstow, Carey running him out. Love to hear your thoughts on that. Obviously, he wasn't too pleased with it, but being a wicketkeeper and he was a wicketkeeper himself. Your take, fair game?
Yeah. Fair game.
Yeah?
Yep. Yeah, Johnny had been trying it a bit himself.
Yep.
I was literally 30,000 feet in the air when that happened, flying to London. So on a family holiday, I wasn't going over to go to the Ashes. We were literally flying into London to have a week in London, and then we got kicking on to a bit of a European vacation. So I landed and turned my phone on the next morning, and Jesus, it nearly blew up. But so I wasn't watching live. I didn't fully know the lead up.
Yep.
So I looked at, just saw the incident, and on initial sort of look, I thought, I don't know. I'm not sure on that. But then as you learn more about it and the build up and what had been going on, the discussions and so on. Yeah, at the end of the day, it was clumsy from Johnny. I don't know to this day that it was necessarily a really well executed plan. They literally had just spoken about, I think Pat just sort of signaled to Kez literally just the ball before to sort of be aware of that. And so he just threw it speculatively and clunked into the stump. So they sort of got a little bonus. But Jesus, the reaction to it's been extraordinary.
Yeah. Did you have anything at the Lords, that room? You know, all the people watching and, you know.
Oh, walking through the long room.
Yeah, the long room.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty hostile, particularly for Lords. I think that's the stunning thing about that is that that's where it's meant to be, you know, all pious and high and mighty, yes. that room.
Top of society.
It's a beautiful room. It's steeped in history. You're very aware of it when you're there. And I think the moment you walk in there, it instantly kicks you into this sort of behaviour mode that you've got to be
proper.
Sort of proper and, yeah, and polite and all, you know, typically aristocratic English almost. So you get a bit nervous that you're going to do something wrong in there. So to see that sort of reaction, that behaviour then was a bit, it's quite unique. We had a game in the West Indies where BJ, Brendan Julian, bowled a ball. It was getting tired, one dayer, and hit a guy called Sherwin Campbell on the pads. BJ ran across to get the ball. Sherwin went for a run, got all tangled up. BJ was quite within his rights to go get the ball. And Sherwin Campbell fell over and BJ picked the ball up, threw the stumps down, out.
Life is full of awesome what ifs and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But the crowd just rioted, like, wow. I'm kidding, like throwing bottles. They had proper bottles. So we had to go off the ground and we thought, oh, well, we'll go off to the pavilion, which has got the members in it. That'd be safe there. And they're throwing bottles at us, like proper bottles. So we went in and had to sit in there for, I don't know, 45 minutes till the cops came and settled all down. Gee. We went back out there and finished the game. And fortunately, the West Indies won. I'm not sure we would have got out.
You had something similar when you got hit by the ball and then you sort of stopped it and then he ran you out and then you went at him. Yeah, did you end up getting given out
for that?
What was that?
Yeah, I hope you got the edited version of that. I reckon I might have been a bit foul-mouthed in what I was saying to him.
I just saw you walking up to him, but did you actually get given out for that?
No, okay. Rahul Dravid was the opposition captain and he came in and told the umpire he didn't want to uphold the appeal.
Right.
Which was,
did you hear that?
But yeah. Technically, I was out.
Yeah.
Because that came up when in looking at this Bairstow thing and you start to get the fine tooth of the, you know, fine tooth comb out of the laws of the game. And I was out. Yeah. I was at the non-strikers end. Someone's hit it in the mid-off. I've turned around and walking back into my crease as the guy throws it at the stumps. We weren't attempting a run, were we? I was just walking back in. But his throw's gone a bit errant and come straight at me. I've self-protection, but I hadn't touched back in. And I've just blocked the ball and it's gone and fallen at the bowler's feet and he's whipped the bails off. I'm out of my ground. But so I was technically out actually, but at the time I just thought, you're kidding, mate, you're not going to run me out for that, eh?
So you challenged him with a few more choice words than that?
Just asked about his integrity and right over the stump, mate.
When you're telling that story, I thought about the Damien Fleming 10-pin bowling down the middle of the crease in the World Cup final. Yeah. The World Cup final or semi-final?
Semi-final.
Semi-final. The same game, Johnny Rhodes just dropped the World Cup?
The game prior, Herschel Gibbs.
Sorry,
Herschel Gibbs. Yeah, dropped Tugger. Mm. And, yeah, Stephen, I think it's been revealed, said you just cost your team the match.
Right.
But some poetic license later on.
Bit of mayonnaise.
Yeah, you've just dropped the World Cup. But that was the game prior, and then the semi-final was the tied match.
Yes.
Where
Flemmo had been 10-pin bowling.
Yeah, we have Julio's nerds. And the night before, we went 10-pin bowling. And I can't remember what the result was at the 10-pin bowling, but the next day, it was definitely nerds win because Flemmo delivered the perfect delivery to me to whip the bails off at the other end.
What was it? Something Van Nerves?
Julio's.
What's Julio's nerds?
Julio's nerds. So the Julios are all the good looking, a bit like the batters versus the bowler. Like the
blokes Batman V forwards.
Yeah, they're all good looking, well dressed.
So you're a nerd, mate?
Yeah. Yeah, big time. and Flemmo was captain.
Captain the nerds.
I think this is from Backchat with Justin Langer. I'm going to tell you into a back page. No. Justin Langer tells us that his ball to Jack Callis got him LBW. Langer says it's the best ball you have ever seen. Is this true?
I'd forgotten about it, actually. Where'd that happen?
He reckons, yeah, is this right?
Brisbane?
Jane, this is correct, isn't it? Yeah. So he tells us, yeah. Adam Gilchrist, kept to the greatest bowlers of all time, Shane Warne, Glenn McGrath, list goes on, says that his ball, again, Jack Callis, LBW, is the best ball you've ever seen.
JL is absolutely full of shit. So chop that up for social media. Put him on one side saying that quote and my reaction next to it.
Do you actually remember it or not?
No. And I don't want to.
Oh, that's good.
Oh, well, the only way he would have got him LBW is if it was going under the stumps.
The height
that JL was bowling from.
Yeah, correct. We've probably got some good questions to get to in this next little bit, Dan. So I think we should keep moving.
We should.
That's enough from Dan and I. Got a last little segment we like to call social media, not social. I thought you might like that. Now, social media, this is where the people get to ask the questions of Adam Gilchrist. Isaac Dowling, who I believe will be kicking a goal.
Yeah.
I think that's Isaac.
Is that the bloke? He's kicking for $1,000?
Yeah.
Yes. How does he know about that?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a big batcher fan.
Knows your stuff, mate.
Okay, very good. Not bad, Gilly.
Thoughts on a fast bowling captain? Out of your bowlers, who would be the best captain?
Ooh.
Who's head of the fast bowling cartel? That's probably what the question
is. McGrath's president.
Right.
Yeah, he's the revered one. He's the, yeah.
Still standing? Does he still have a bit of input in there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he opens the meetings whenever we get together. Hussey's the takes the minutes, which is bloody hilarious. He delivers them a couple of days later. And
it's an actual thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's good. But
But
I wouldn't have McGrath as my captain, no way. That'd be ludicrous. I think Michael Kasperwicz would have been a very good captain. He's not quite the status of your McGraths and Gillespies and so on, but he's a good thinker, good guy. But everyone says Warney was probably the greatest Australian captain there wasn't, because he never captained in Test cricket. He captained very well in one-day cricket, but he would have been creative and funky. He did it for Victoria and he'd had all these gridiron calls like blue 42 and then blokes would just start running everywhere. You'd be batting out, and they'd put four out on the leg side on the boundary and you'd go, oh, I wonder where they're going to bowl. And they'd run in bowl short and blokes would just go whack and hitting them for six over their heads. I think you're telegramming it a little bit too much, Morty. I'll nominate Michael Kasperwicz would have been very good.
Great.
Cloudy 91.
Who's your favourite cricket commentator?
Who was?
Who is?
Oh, I think Ian Smith from New Zealand. I think he's jumped into the number one position around the world. Like, he works with us at Fox, but he's so experienced and just calls it really well. Calls the big moments beautifully with just natural flair.
Yeah,
I was a big fan of the 12th man, Billy Birmingham. Did you blokes used to be aware of that when you were playing?
Yeah. Mate, get a mention in that. You thought you'd made it in cricket.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he used to put that on the change rooms. It's funny, we talked to Woz Macram about it just this year and, you know, wondering what their take on it was. And he reckoned they loved it.
Really?
It was hilarious.
That's brilliant. Awesome. Very good. You've done a bit of commentating, obviously, but – Jaden was telling us as he was probably playing you in Cricket 24. You're one of the – you've done a bit of commentary for it.
Oh, yeah. Did the video game. The most recent one.
How did that go? We had Matty Richardson who did it on the AFL one. He said it was pretty difficult.
It's intense.
Yeah.
It's like 3 days in a booth for 6 hours a day, just punching out line after line after line.
That's a great shot. Like that sort
of
stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, you got to say wonderful shot, 4 runs to Ponting. Wonderful shot, 4 runs to Hayden. You do it through every cricketer in the world. And then you go, well bowled by McGrath. Like, it's just,
gee,
oh, mate. It sounded like a good idea at the time. But, you know, when you look at what you got paid per word, Jesus, you'd pay that again not to do it.
Really? That's good. That's very good. Did you get to have any of your own lines in there?
Yeah.
Ad libs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they are. But you're so head screwed. You're going, yeah. No, I'm not anything. I want to get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they were good to deal with, good operators.
All right, Hayden Ratcliffe, and just a bit of context to this one, we like to talk about who was I like to talk about who my bunny was, right, as a player.
Yeah.
So this question.
Yeah, favourite bowler you faced. Every time he bowled, your eyes lit up.
Dan Vettori.
Wow.
Yeah, left arm orthodox, shouldn't be allowed in cricket.
No need for him. Have you told that to Dan? Does Dan know this?
Oh, he knows.
You tell him
17 sixes. He knows the stats.
He knows the stats.
Brilliant.
He had me plum LB in Adelaide one test match. Absolutely. So I went back to him, pitched outside, just spun in, you know, just it was cannoning in the middle and I was just plum. And I don't know why, but Rudy Goodson gave me not out. And Dan was just pleading in tears and he just turned around and looked, Gilly, can't you walk? Can't you please just walk? And I just burst out, like, mate, not on LB, surely. He's a top bloke. He's a bloody good. He was a good bowler.
That is very good. Very, very good. Smith, mate, 23.
What position would you play on the footy field? Well,
forward line. Full forward. Don't need to leave forward. There.
You don't want to change it, knowing sort of what you know?
Yeah, I don't think I'd be.
Okay.
I think I'd be a bit timid.
Who do you go for?
Carlton.
Ooh. Thoughts? This year?
Yeah, give us
2 wins after 1 round.
Yeah.
So good. we're sitting pretty.
200%.
I want the Adam Gilchrist take on Carlton this year. Give us your highest hopes. What's going to happen?
Oh, it's ours.
Right.
Certainty.
Premiership.
Yeah. Just every year you keep incrementally increasing. And
has it been a tough ride as a Carlton fan?
Well, I just remember back to the real glory day. It has been. It has been. But got to stick with them. I was asked to be Eagles' number one ticket holder. Dalton Gooding was the chairman.
That was around premiership years?
Yeah.
And you said?
I said, no thanks. I couldn't because I'd been a Carlton member for forever.
You couldn't do that?
Yeah. No.
Doesn't matter if you can wicket keep.
People in Perth, I'm that's the best thing. You're kidding. Don't say no to them. But I stuck with the Blues, so.
You should tell Carlton all that. Just give
They're well aware of it.
Oh, great.
That's integrity. Yeah. That is what integrity is in one word.
They're having a crack, aren't they?
Yeah, correct.
It's a better competition if Carlton are doing well.
Do you have a favourite player or not?
Spot? I really like Sam Doherty.
Yeah, far out.
Heart bleeds for him. So.
Yep.
That's terrible.
But,
Harry Mackay, Charlie Curnow. I like how they go about it.
It's interesting you name the forwards there, though.
Well, because I don't have to play them anymore. Right. It's great to watch them. It's terrific. Sitting on the sidelines with a beer in my hand. They got some good backmen too. One of them just made some errors with the bank, didn't he? Jacob Wiedering?
Yeah, he did.
Gave him all the details and that took all his money. Now, track one.
You can have six people to have around for dinner, dead or alive. Who would it be?
Oh, dear. Six of them. Dead or alive.
Give him six. That's a big
let's go difference. Let's go three for the ease of the question.
Yeah. Geez, I've never peeled off any regular names. I'm gonna go who's dead. Oh well, I shouldn't laugh. I'm gonna have Roy there.
Yeah.
That's a must.
What's he bringing to the table? Laughs, a few beers.
A lot of.
Is he cooking?
Yes.
Bringing a bit of meal?
Yeah, he fancied himself on the tools, on the barbecue.
Unreal.
He probably would have gone and caught something or shot something and he'd rock in with it and he'd have a way to prepare it. So Roy's there. Now I'm thinking down that line. I'd almost throw Darren Lehman in there too because he's very valuable. But I've got to broaden my horizon there. Movies, I'm going to go with I find him annoyingly intriguing. Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Annoyingly, absolutely. But intriguing.
Yeah. Right.
So I'm not sure whether by the end of the night he's annoying or intriguing, but yeah, I'll work it out.
He'd have his shirt off by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Right. But he has just released a tequila label, and that interests me. I'd like to try that.
Sure. You're a tequila fan.
I'm a very big tequila fan.
How are you drinking it?
How
are you? Are you just having it on ice, like soda? You mixing it?
Sometimes.
How hard?
I've just heard it gives you no hangovers. But well, like, how do you
like anything?
You're just
stuff.
Shooting to like depends when you go. I would like to have a tequila. You're
yeah,
just shooting
well,
it?
Prairie Fire is the preferred choice. So that's a shot of tequila with three. It's recommended three drops of Tabasco sauce.
Wow.
So you tell me someone who's had one of them every day that's had COVID.
Is that what you've done?
Yeah. not always exclusively one, but. Oh, no, I'm getting bogged here. Who else am I going to throw in there? Well, at the moment, I'm going to stay within my sport. Mitch Marsh.
Right. I mean, that's a good again, deal party.
The Bison.
The Bison.
We love the Bison.
Speak about the Bison. You said Bison t-shirt behind you?
Yeah, I know. That's
a bit fat and I love beer.
That is good. That is real good.
Maybe we make an Adam Gilchrist one.
Speech that was.
We'll make an Adam Gilchrist one that says, how do you like your tequila? How no, don't
no,
I like my
no,
tequila?
No, how do you drink it? How don't you drink it?
Can we please make that t-shirt? It's bloody brilliant. Just sort of something as you were speaking about that. I can't remember now. We were just talking about number one ticket holders, AJ McAvoy.
Oh, sorry. I've lost. Oh, here. How does being Claremont's number one ticket holder rate amongst your list of achievements?
Yeah, up there.
Up there.
Absolutely. No, that's great. It's the most expensive number one ticket holder position ever. Like, there's a whole batch of us that chuck money in each year to – just to contribute to the club, and what that gets you is a position on the deck down there, Dollars Deck.
I've copped it from the deck before.
Yeah.
Copped
yeah.
it. Absolutely. You might have been on there.
I've
copped it.
The back
the
end
worst
of
in the waffle. Yeah. The worst in the waffle, the Claremont Footy Club.
Oh, mate, if you pay $1,000, you can say whatever you want.
I know. I'm at the end of it.
Guarantees you a cold pie and a warm beer. And that's it. It's no corporate hospitality. It's standing out there, rain, hail, or shine.
And abuse.
But you're so close, particularly if you're in the back line or forward line, that down that end. It's unreal. Great fun. But, yeah, I don't think I get overly inundated with extra responsibilities or comforts
right.
just because I'm number one ticket holder.
I got towed up by Jack Bullows now at the Sydney Swans one day, 2 years ago, one of my last games of waffle footy. And the Claremont members department gave me to some of the best serving I've ever copped. Yeah. And I say that with respect because I love it.
And the club president's in there doing it too. But one of my great days was with Jack kicking one from right in front of the deck.
It's probably on me.
To win the game. I don't know if it was you.
It was a close game. Could have been me.
Yeah. But I was sitting behind his father who was sitting on the deck watching it right in alignment of, right behind Jack kicking it. It was brilliant.
Oh,
it was
so his dad's up there moment. Too abusing me. That's good. Become good mates with Jack Blues. Come on. Now, this is on the back of what my comments earlier in the podcast that I think you have to be one of the most monetized men in sport. I've seen you do ads for – and I mean this with respect because I love it. It's give me some aspiration really. But you've been ambassador – You've been lead guy for a lot of brands.
I'm a tart, you reckon?
I'm just saying you're well monetized.
Saw him recently for KO. What's the line? Get on board.
Get on board.
Well, big shout out to our sponsors, Paywise, Whippersnapper Whiskey, Shelter, Mother Digital. Don't worry, we respect the monetization, mate.
Yeah.
Dubster asks, what's the strangest Indian brand you've done an ad for?
My very first ever ad. In Australia, I'll get to India, was for Crown Forklifts.
That's picking it up and putting it down.
Nothing like a crown. That's exactly it.
Is that right?
To the point where one of my teammates' managers sent a letter. It wasn't even an email with a bit of paper with a crown with a forklift on it with one of those big, like, round no smoking signs over the top of it saying, you don't need your client promoting those things. Like how lowbrow it was compared to all the big blue chip sort of.
Nike.
Have I gone too low here? But it was a good spot to start. In India, we did some pretty dodgy ads in India. We've done a lot of dodgy ads in India. Kelvinator fridges 1 year, which was
brilliant.
Just walking around pretending we're in the showers with the towels around us trying to look really big, trying to get cold. And then the way you get cold, you get in your Kelvinator fridge.
Brilliant.
Just writing these scripts.
Brilliant concept.
We've spoken a bit of Hindi in Indian ads. Have you? We've done it all, most of it. Most of the guys over the years have done it.
That's great.
That's very good. Just imagine you walking in. All right, boys, just get in the towels. We'll just jump in the fridge, cool yourself
tough
off.
Breathing in for a whole day shoot.
Now, it would look, it would be remiss of us not to include this man. Oh, wait, hang on. You're changing it as we're speaking. Okay.
Jaden
Ellis
questions.
Is contributing to the show as we're reading it out. You're changing it as I'm speaking. You absolute. Oh, God.
When was your last game of cricket, Jaden?
Jaden doesn't have a microphone, but.
No, you bet. I'll yell it out. The answer. You can yell
it's
it out.
A bit rattled.
We'll,
you can have a chat afterwards.
Jaden, high school, right.
Jaden underscore Ellis.
Yep.
It was biggest change room blow up, but he's changed it as I'm reading. Thoughts on Brett Lee's movie.
Yeah, I'll happily answer that one better. I was sitting in something quite extraordinary, unique, whatever word, confronting, sitting next to one of your best mates to watch the opening night.
Premiere
of his movie on the big screen here in Perth. You're and I did that sitting next to Binger.
Did you?
And,
how'd it go?
I was nervous because and I had good reason because I didn't know when I was meant to be laughing or crying or being serious or what. It was a bit hard to follow, but he gave it his best shot. He, yeah.
I'm sure he got paid a pretty penny for it.
Gave it his best shot.
I think, you reckon he, talking of monetized cricketers, I think Bingo's right up in the top bracket.
Does he take you off the top or?
Yeah, I think he probably would,
You know you're well monetized.
A bit more marketable than me.
Beautiful man, Brett Bradley.
He is.
Beautiful
man. He's a lot of things going for him, Bingo.
Yep.
Last couple, Michael underscore Edwards, 92.
What was the best sledge you ever copped?
Copped.
Mm.
Or heard. Copped probably.
I don't remember anything too witty copping it. I got sledge about my ears, how big they are. Mm. Like, that's pretty obvious and pretty easy.
Lo-fi.
Best one I heard, I reckon, was because it's a fine line between sledging and abusing. You know, once you start dropping F-bombs and just ripping into someone with swear words, it's not that witty. But one of the war boys, not Stephen, not Mark. It was younger brother Dean, who terrifically good cricketer, but had a huge expectation on him. Obviously, being younger brother of such talented twins, I mentioned about them both being Mark and Steve, national representatives at soccer and tennis, and then the cricket legends they became. So Dino had a big expectation on him from everyone around. You know, watching that blowtorch was on him and the microscope in a grade game, a rare time when all the war boys were playing. They were back from international duty in Sydney. Steve, we got him out. We got Mark out, but Dino was out there struggling, playing miss. I think got bowled off a no ball, nicked through slips, hit the pads, looked horrible. Everyone's there watching him. How's the next one going? Is he any good? And then finally our opening bowler came down, who never really sledged much. He just looked at him and said, you must be the adopted one.
Oh,
I reckon it's a
brutal,
it's a harsh, that's but pretty cool call. Well thought out.
Yeah,
but he went on to play state cricket himself. But that's probably one of the better
that's
ones
great.
I've heard.
What's his hat on your head? What's this Prairie Fire?
This
business?
Is Club Prairie Fire. So this is a little inspired by the likes of you guys and all the various other 100,000 podcasts that are out there these days. But yeah, well, I mean, if you're, what are you, 2 or 3 years into it now?
Mm.
Jesus, that's surviving longer than a lot.
It's a bit of talk, talking, mate.
Yeah.
But, so, tell listeners if they want to join it. Who is it? Who are the boys?
Myself and Michael Vaughan.
Yes.
So there's a nice little rivalry there between Australia and England, and that's where it started when we were watching the Ashes last year. We just thought, shit, we might as well just start talking about it and have a bit of a laugh. But it's light entertainment. It's not deep analysis of cricket. If you're looking for that, go elsewhere. Go to Fox Cricket's coverage or podcast and then you'll get deep analysis. But we're there more for the light-hearted banter. Vaughnie's humour is something that a lot of people aren't aware of, and his sarcasm, but it's the Indians are starting to learn about it because India – India just beat many sports people and cricket fans will know. India just beat England 4-1 over there. Brilliant. On the back of the baseball revolution going there.
It's going well.
And Vaughney feels that England completely dominated that series. And they just got a little bit unlucky on a couple of occasions. And, you know, hence it's 4-1, but he can't wait to get back there again and see him rectify it.
Surprised he didn't think they've won.
Yeah, well, that's what we just keep saying. It was a moral victory. And and so, you know, that when he says comments like that, our Indian followers, they don't light up much. They really give him some shit. But at Club Prairie Fire. So that's named after the drink that I mentioned earlier.
Yeah. So
the Prairie Fire. And that's the inspiration of the whole actual podcast.
Right. So you both love tequila.
My desire to get a sponsorship of a tequila brand on Club Prairie Fire.
Do you not have one?
No.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Where you get that?
Right. So the Gilly, let me tell you a quick story about monetization. Yep. Our first ever sponsor here, Whippersnapper Whiskey. Shout out Whippersnapper Whiskey.
Yep.
Came about because we love drinking whiskey.
There you go.
And we said, any whiskey brands out there, want to give us some free whiskey, we'll give us some free advertising. I'm surprised you haven't been able to do it.
There's hope for me. That's the light at the end of the tunnel that I need.
Yeah.
Because
tequila brands.
You know, we're only newbies to the game and it's all about tequila.
It's Club a home run.
Prairie Fire.
Yeah, that's
I think we must be doing something right. We've hit YouTube, which we're following in the lead of you guys and the pod, and it's a visual of show like this. Maybe not as quite as high tech as this, but
well, that's fine.
But we're having fun. But we've got a bit of merch. I know you blokes are in your merch, so this is our first entry into merch. I've left a couple of caps there. Jaden's surprised he hasn't got one on actually. But,
Gilly, it would be my great honour. One, I think making that shirt I'm talking about would be a great idea because I think it would lend itself to a tequila sponsorship for Prairie Fire. We don't look at anyone's competition. No exact details. We just want tequila of some description. It was on the bottom shelf.
We were going to launch our own one. That came up very early in discussion. So we've got Vaughney and myself, and then we've got the professor. He's sort of he really facilitates the show, and our erstwhile producer, Ollie. And amongst it, we did come up with one label called El Shitter. You'll start with a little bit El Shitter. The labeling didn't really work and I don't think too many people were going to – I think it was going to be a tough sell. So we've parked that idea of doing our own. We're open for offers.
I want to just lean our way in here and just help Gilly out a little bit.
I appreciate it.
He doesn't quite know what he's doing. He's trying to monetize things, obviously. Last question from the Eggman.
How does Gilly like his eggs?
Eggs, pretty boring scrambled. Mm. Yeah, I'll have a crack at other options, but scrambled, good solid scrambled eggs and toast.
Gilly, that's us. Did you have fun?
Loved it. Very fun, boys.
Backchatstudios.com.au. You can find all the goss over there. Backchat _. Follow us there. A big thank you to our sponsors, Paywise, powering the podcast this year. Tab Touch backing us as well. Whippersnapper Whiskey, Shelter Brewing Co. Mumba Digital, all the crew around there. If you want some merch, you're going to find the Gilchrist merch up there. We're just joking. Or are we? Gilly, thank you very much.
Thanks, absolute pleasure.